The next item on the agenda is to public hearing to accept comments on proposal of the Virginia Seafood Council to place overboard and continue investigations of the marketability of the non-native area Kansas oyster. Mr. Travelstead.
Good afternoon. This is a public hearing that is mandated by the code when applications are made to place non-native oysters overboard. You'll find it in section 28.2-826. I think that's in your supplement. That code section specifies that this hearing has to be held at least 30 days from the date the commissioner will make his decision on the application, but no longer than 60 days from that decision. And so with the hearing being held today, the commissioner will be able to make his decision on the application as early as April 24th to satisfy the calendar that's there. Note, too, that I said the commissioner makes the decision. That's also specified in the law, although the hearing is being held before the full commission. You certainly have an opportunity to make comments as well today on the record, or even vote as a group if you choose to provide that advice to the commissioner. There's also a requirement that we consult with the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, and that also will occur prior to the decision. We've only received at this point four letters
on the subject, one of which was actually addressed to Colonel Aninos at 400 years,
provided to you because it's on that subject. It's from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. There's also a letter from the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, an individual, Ms. Masters, the Nature Conservancy, and the Rappahannock Preservation Society. The only other piece of information that I want to provide you, and I know Francis Porter, and perhaps A.J. Erskine will step up next to provide you more details about their application. A lot of the comments that you see here and that we've heard from others are in opposition to the application, mostly on the basis that the timing of this study is such that it will not provide its final results directly to the environmental impact statement that is being done on the issue. And therefore, the study should not go forward. And just to fill in or remind you where we are on the EIS, I would point out that the latest schedule has the draft EIS completed around mid-June of this year. We will then go through a process of public meetings in both Virginia and Maryland, public comment periods, and then a final printing and distribution of the final EIS around mid-October, and then a record of decision from the three entities, BMRC, Maryland DNR, Corps of Engineers, mid-December of this year. And I just point that out to say that if the project, the Seafood Council project, were to go forward, while the final results of that may not be able to be included in the EIS, there certainly may be things that we learn between now and December, when the record of decision is done, where they, you know, those results could enter into that decision. The other thing I would note on the EIS, the draft EIS that will be out in June will not indicate a preferred alternative. You will not see a preferred alternative until the final EIS, which will appear in October. So just some additional facts for you to consider there.
Thank you, Jack. Any questions of Jack? Thanks, Jack. I'm sorry, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack, could you speak to some of the biosecurity concerns that are raised in the Fish and Wildlife Service letter? I mean, it's my understanding that
I think it would be more appropriate if I deferred to Roger Mann. I think he's here and can speak to some of those issues.
Dr. Mann? Thanks, Jack.
I actually saw a draft of that letter 3 hours ago. Do you want me to give the VIMS opinion, or are you done?
I'm done.
All right. This proposed trial, like all proposed trials before it, is not without risk. There are two forms of risk that go into these trials. And I think it's important that we look at both of those in trying to answer your question. Because the way that letter is drafted, and I don't wish to take away from our colleagues at Fish and Wildlife Service, they've worked with the information that's been given to them, is that they've gone through the records of all the prior trials and they've tried to count where things have got lost. And then when things get lost overboard and then when they get rediscovered, the question becomes, if there's enough of this stuff that is lost and rediscovered, how much of it remains out there after a trial and how much of that represents an ongoing risk? Because triploids can possibly become diploids. And that's really where they sort of pose their question in terms of the fact that they give some numbers on rates of reversion. What is reversion and what is triploidy? Just so that we're all on the same page here. Oysters are diploid, two sets of chromosomes, one from mom, one from dad. When you get triploids, you essentially end up with three chromosomes in each cell, and the argument is that with three chromosomes in each cell, you cannot form viable sperms or egg, and therefore you are sterile. Therefore, you can go overboard, and the probability of there being active reproduction from those originating animals is, in theory, zero. Nothing is ever quite that perfect, and on very rare occasions, there is always the possibility that a triploid may in fact go to diploid, three cells to two cells, and then you get active sperm and egg reproduction, and then you follow down the line. Those are calculations that involve enormous numbers of decimal points and very debatable efforts at trying to estimate probability. And I'm not defending at this point either the Seafood Council or the Fish and Wildlife or on either sides of that. The, quote, risk model that we have used for every one of these efforts so far, I think it's generous to call it a model. It's based on a calculation that I did in 1996 with some very nice additions to it made by my colleague Mark Luckenbach. And every time we get to debate one of these things, we get out that same calculation and argue about the errors in it. And the errors in it, we all recognize, are enormous because some of these things are this much above a guess. So when I look at the question that's before you in terms of that letter, there are modest numbers of animals which are unaccounted for in terms of this biosecurity. If you look at those and you say, what's the probability of them, A, living long enough to go back to being diploid, and there being enough of them around in terms of proximity for two of them to go diploid in the same place at the same time and actually reproduce, you end up with a number that's got a lot of decimal points in front of it. Nonetheless, it is a positive number. So I think when you look at the tone of that letter, it's this proposal is not without risk. They are correct. The question becomes, how big of a risk is it? And as part of the process that we are in the midst of now, there is an ad hoc committee that consists of representatives from the states around the bay, and myself and Jack represent Virginia, and from several federal agencies, and we get together, and we usually have a fairly heated debate about what are the pros and the cons of this, and the focus of that debate is always this calculation. That debate has not happened with respect to this particular request, and so if the Fish and Wildlife has a new twist on that number, I would be happy to hear it and give you my opinion of it. The only thing I can say is that the numbers that they put there are very, very small, but they do nonetheless exist. So that's one part of biosecurity, and it relates to if you've got 1 million oysters out there parceled in 70 to 100,000 lots, can you account for every one of them? Everyone in this audience who's cultured oysters will tell you that you can't. Maybe some of them drop out of the trays. Maybe some of them die. Maybe the shells fall apart. Maybe the shells go through. You cannot account for everyone. So there is always that loss function that you don't know what it is. So that's one part of biosecurity that, try as we may, will never, ever go away in terms of being a problem. The other part of it that's not really addressed in there, and I think it's important to consider it with respect to the current proposal. The current proposal emphasizes that there is always interest in ensuring that the product that actually goes out into the water, the product that comes from the hatchery, goes to the seed and goes out, that we do our absolute very best to ensure that every one of those is triploid. Now, when we started in on this process several years ago, there was much debate, and again, part of this interesting calculation that has errors in it, there was much debate about what would be an acceptable level of triploids. Was it 1 in 1,000? Was it 3 in 3,000? Was it 10 in 10,000? Was it 3 in 10,000? And we went round and round on this. And we eventually settled on 1 in 1,000, and we did a series of calculations based on that, which essentially set the protocols by which all of these people in the Seafood Council have lived throughout all of these trials so far. And as a sidebar here, I'd like to make a comment on that. Never, never in my 30-plus years of being associated with the commercial industry in doing aquaculture have I ever seen such remarkable impositions put on a group that's actually growing something. This group has followed every constriction that's been put on them. They've done it to the letter. And as a group of citizens, they are laudable. They are remarkable. They follow this and they come back and they propose to do it again. Never have I seen this, and I must say that as a group, they certainly have my praise for doing that. Our job at VIMS is to get them the very best product, and part of this proposal is, can we get the 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000? That's really not my job. It's my colleague Stan Allen's, and he tells me he can do this, and he's very good at it. And the way in which we make triploids now is not the way in which we did when we started doing triploids many years ago. It's by this cross-mating. You can get cross-mating mixed up. You put a couple of diploids in there, and everything comes out diploid. But you know what? We've done that in the hatchery, and we know how to catch that. If we do this as the diploid tetraploid and we get all triploids, I talked to Stan about 30 minutes ago on the phone about this, and he said, look, this thing about reversion and about triploids mating really is just about a non-issue numerically. There's lots and lots and lots of decimal points in front of it. It doesn't go away, but it's very, very small. So when you look at the accumulated risks in here, and I'll comment about the EIS in a moment. Let's take that out. If the question before you without the EIS is, can we do this with a minimal amount of risk? What's minimal? We can get you 1 in 10,000. I bet you my house we can get you 1 in 10,000. We've done it before. We can do it again. Can we do that for very large numbers? I'm very confident that we can. That still means if you're going to put 1 million of them out there, 1 in 10,000 into 1 million gives you still a fair number. What's the probability of them all ending up in the same tray? Very small, but it is a probability. And what's the probability you're going to lose some? You will. So all of the tone of the comments that are in that Fish and Wildlife letter, there is small but perceptible risk. They are perfectly right. You will never get it to go away. And so as I stand here in front of you and you say to me, is that acceptable risk? We have accepted that risk in the past for the purpose of doing a couple of things. One, gaining scientific information on a very large scale. In all of the history of introductions of oysters, which goes back over 100 years and on every continent except Antarctica, never have a series of experiments like this been done before. I think it's remarkable that the Seafood Council has done that for us. So we have gained a fabulous amount of information. Is it useful in the EIS process? Absolutely. It's very useful. What's the science in the new one? And this is where we get into a really different set of scenarios. I think if you read the proposal carefully, and without sort of taking the words out of my good friend A.J. Erskine's, there's not a lot of new science in this. There's some important things that the Seafood Council needs to know. The shelf life issue. The shelf life issue for this animal is a very considerable problem in terms of how you market it. This is not a trivial thing. I don't think you need to grow 1.3 million animals to look at that, but you do need to look at it because it's a big issue when it comes to the whole debate about how you go forward with this. Is this going to make or break any one of these companies? No, it's not. But, you know, they've invested a lot in this in terms of actually building a product line, which is very special. They've taken essentially tasks that were set in the tone of things that were written by the General Assembly, and they have followed on the philosophies that come out of the Blue Ribbon Panel. Aquaculture is the way in which this industry is going to grow. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. This is aquaculture, and this is where the Virginia oyster industry is going to go. So when we look at this, the trade-off that's before you is a very modest amount of science, which will be useful, very useful. But you don't need 1.3 million animals to do it. You've got an industry, a group of people who've put their money where their mouth is, and they're doing something very good. And if it's not with this oyster, it's with the native. And this is very important, I think, to foster this sort of industry. That's a science decision. I can tell you something about the science. The social decision, I have no idea how to do that. And unfortunately for you, that's your job. Fortunately for me, it's not mine. Let me then put that in the context of the EIS. Jack has given you a schedule. We've watched this schedule slip and slip and slip. I'm a member of the science review panel for that EIS. I haven't seen any of it yet. I'm not going to bet you my house that it's not here by December because Colonel Aninos is driving this and he's a very forceful man for whom I have a lot of great respect. We don't know how that's going to come out. I would not predict at all how it's going to come out. And I think that the great difficulty that I have one way or the other with this, and I don't think I've ever stood at this podium and been at the point where I say yes or no, but with this one I'm right in the middle and I don't know which, is that if the people in the Seafood Council actually go ahead with this and you grant them a permit, that we end up with a record of decision after way through their trial when the commissioner tells them they have to pull it out. And that's a social and economic decision that really is a debate between you as a regulatory body and the Seafood Council as those individuals who are investing their hard-earned cash in this. That is not one where science comes into it at all. So there is risk. It's very small. We've accepted it in the past for certain scientific reasons. If you go ahead with this, there will be risk. It will be small, but there are some science issues in here that will be useful, but you don't need 1.3 million animals to do it. On the other side, you are weighing, I think, a group of individuals who've exhibited extraordinary commitment to this industry. You've just done that for all these men who are crab fishermen. You're going to do that again to a group of individuals who I think are in the forefront of this, and that's a social decision. So there is some risk, there's some science. You don't need 1.3 million to do the science, but that isn't the entire question here.
Questions for Dr. Mann?
I just got one.
Mr. Holland?
How many years have we been studying the Arkansas oyster to put it overboard?
I think this is either the sixth or the seventh.
Thank you.
Dr. Mann, thank you for your wisdom and candor. Who would like to speak next on this matter? As A.J. Didn't get the periphery around, Francis, come forward, please. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon. I am Frances Porter with Virginia Seafood Council, and I've told you who we are a lot of times. I don't think I need to tell you that again. And I'm here again to request permission to conduct a non-native oyster project in 2008-2009. The goal of each project since 2000 has been to determine the viability of Area Kansas as a complement to the native oyster. The ultimate purpose is to restore the ecological role of oysters in the bay and the economic role of the commercial oyster fishery in the Commonwealth. And I would say here, in response to Dr. Mann's comments, which I appreciate very much, that we need 1.3 million oysters to maintain the markets we have developed through these studies over the last 7 years. We have established reliable markets for Air Kansas, and we want to continue the project to supply those markets this year. And there's other valuable information to be gained from these grow outs, as Roger has said. We propose to conduct some shelf life studies. We also propose, in conjunction with Dr. Allen, to increase the number of triploid certifications to better refine the percent diploid. In the 2007, VIM certified 10,000 triploid seed and found no diploids, zero. We estimate this year several batches of 10,000 oysters will be tested, and we are hopeful that there will be no diploids. When our 2004 project was permitted, the National Academy of Sciences was completing a review of Maryland, Virginia's interest in the Chrysostomia area, Kansas. The findings from that review in August 2003 called for an environmental impact statement. From the fall of 2003 until today, preparation of the EIS has been ongoing 4.5 years. The draft EIS was not completed last May, as I stood here last February and told you it would be. We're now expecting it by mid-June of this year, and I think Roger maybe just gave us something a little later even than that. And then a public comment period will follow the draft, and then a final statement will hopefully be released by the end of 2008. And we don't expect that to include a record of decision. I hope you are aware of that. Virginia Seafood Council has been ardently seeking solutions to a declining oyster resource since 1990, almost 20 years. These have been 18 years of steadily declining oyster harvest without a new resource being permitted for the bay. In both 2003 and 2005, we placed 1 million oysters at 10 sites in the bay. 2007, you gave us permission for 1.5 million oysters in a one-year grow out at 15 sites. As the 2006 project concludes, there are still no guidelines from an EIS to allow a commercial industry to develop with non-native oysters. Consequently, I'm once again seeking your permission for a one-year grow out. You've seen the proposal. With each project, we have gained more useful information, and we've grown more confident that this oyster is a good choice for the Chesapeake Bay. It is important to note that Dr. Stan Allen is able to provide the genetically sterilized oysters, which are disease and parasite-free. The area of Kansas has proven to be resistant to dermo and MSX, and it grows rapidly, far outpacing the native oyster. We've also learned that there is a high demand for this product in the marketplace, and we have been providing the valuable information to the federal agencies involved in the EIS. It is important to note that Virginia Seafood Council's members conducting these projects have been creative, cooperative, instructive, and exceedingly conscientious, and we are proud of our performance and our successes, and that echoes what Dr. Mann has said. You are aware of the intense scrutiny from federal, state, and environmental agencies that the projects have survived. We have been conscientious to address not only issues of production, but also matters of security, ecological impacts, and regulatory controls. In fact, that is particularly noteworthy. With each permit, there have been more conditions, more regulations, more safety provisions, more cost, more record keeping, more of everything. And the Virginia Seafood Council, in conjunction with VIMS, has met every condition, followed every guideline, communicated openly about each step of the project, and we have been individually and collectively excellent stewards of the project and the product. Since our proposal was made public in February, we've received numerous email messages that indicate U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and now you have received that letter, the Chesapeake Bay Office of the EPA, NOAA, and some coastal states do not support this proposal. U.S. Fish and Wildlife is insistent that we use the risk model to proactively manage possible inadvertent reproduction. You've heard all of Roger's comments on that. Last year, the model, imperfect as it is, suggested sites where reproduction could possibly or likely, most likely occur. So after lengthy discussions with federal agencies, we relocated those sites at Chincoteague, Accomack, and Kinsale. And we don't know yet what the model will require of us in 2008-2009. Virginia Seafood Council is available to communicate and negotiate with the federal agencies, but to date this year, we have not been invited into those discussions. Please understand federal agencies who oppose the 2008 project are the same agencies who are responsible for the completion of the EIS. Now, it is important to note that the Army Corps of Engineers is the lead agency on the EIS and that Colonel Aninos and his staff are pushing very hard for the completion. The Army Corps has been very helpful to the Virginia Seafood Council in this long process, and their leadership is invaluable in bringing the other federal agencies and interested parties to the table to complete the work. Another subject. In every discussion with federal agents, the question of native oysters comes up. Our permits have required us some years to grow some native oysters at every site for purposes of comparison. There is a relatively successful Virginia oyster in the mix, a triploid virginica, which is being grown aquaculturally by numerous industry members. It is, in fact, being grown on a fairly large scale by some of our project participants. We are pleased with the success of that oyster and hope that it can maintain its health and growth to market size. I don't know at this time if it has withstood the stress of a long, hot, dry summer in which dermo and MSX become prevalent in the bay and its tributaries. Ultimately, as I said in the beginning, we hope the Areakensis and the Virginica can be complementary resources, restoring the vital ecological benefits to the bay and supplying a commercial industry with hundreds of thousands of bushels of marketable oysters. And so, as we await the outcome of the environmental impact statement, we again respectfully request your permission to conduct another commercial project almost identical to the 2007 project beginning in June 2008. Our project manager, James Kirkpatrick, is present. Our first project manager, now president of Virginia Seafood Council, is present. They are both able to answer any questions you may have. And Mr. Bowman, if there is other public comment, I would like to reserve the right to speak again following that.
Yes, ma'am. Any questions of Ms. Porter? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak in support of this project? Kent? What up, buddy? Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is Kent Carr, and I was asked a question what I thought about the Asian oysters a couple weeks ago, and I'd like to express my opinion on it. I don't really know much about it, and I feel that the native oystermen and the watermen around here would like to get some literature and they'll educate themselves a little bit more over this matter before we could speak our opinion on it, because it's crucial to our livelihood, and if we don't get any information about it or know any of the results of the test and stuff, we don't have any comment to make back on, you know, on this issue. And what I've heard since I was asked that question has been pretty good remarks. The only other thing I've heard that the shell life might be a little different on, because the shell's a little thinner, but so far what I've heard from it, I sort of support, because it's areas in the state like on the eastern shore and up Rappahannock and Potomac that this oyster could be of value to the oysterman end of seafood business.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. I appreciate it. Who's next? Okay, I'm Bob.
I'm probably the only one in the room that's had first-hand experience with this animal, the Areakensis, in a pond right behind the house that I was living in. This was several years ago.
I remember.
And you remember. And listen, I called Jack yesterday, and I said, Jack, I want to support this project. Number one, it's the only project I know of supported by VMRC that has gone to such massive detail, and the watermen that have been participating in it have executed it flawlessly. And what I can't for the world see any reason for denying the Seafood Council's request to continue this effort, because that animal, when it's up the size of a pie plate, is pumping water, filtering water at a rate probably it would take, I'd say, at least 10 native oysters of 4-inch capacity size to do the same thing. So we need animals in the bay that will process the water for us. So my vote is go for it.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in support? AJ? Y'all warm now.
Mr. Bowman, members of the commission, AJ Erskine with Bevan's Oyster Company and Coward Seafood with the Seafood Council, Coward Seafood and the Seafood Council as well. I'd like to obviously lend our support for the project as well, and I just wanted to address maybe 2 points. There's a lot of talk in the letters that you saw, as well as the federal agencies, that the Seafood Council should use a native oyster as a safer alternative to Ariakensis, and we do that currently. We grow millions of triploid virginica, and although it is, I would say, moderately successful, there are no guarantees. There's no guarantees with Ariakensis either, but we do know that it survives. We do know that we're going to get a marketable product out of Ariakensis. With virginica, we don't know. It's a bit of a gamble. We have the infrastructure in place to deal with triploid Ariakensis responsibly and get this to a market size. The other one that I wanted to address was reproduction. And there's been a lot of discussion about these triploids either reproducing the way this proposal is set up, like ones in the past, we deploy these oysters at a very small size in contained systems, upwellers and downwellers, in the first summer. So they're non-reproductive. They're too small to reproduce. And subsequently, we remove those oysters before the second reproductive season. So we don't have an issue with reproduction. Also, in conjunction with that, there's a discussion that Roger brought up about reversion. And VIMS has actually sampled 3,377 oysters to date, triploid oysters. They haven't found one oyster that's reverted within the reproductive tissue. There are two kinds of tissue in the oyster. One is reproductive, the other is your gill and hemolymph and all the other tissues. They found reversion in the non-reproductive tissue. But to date, we haven't found anything in the reproductive tissue for reversion. So this oyster, to give you an economic perspective, based on 100,000 oysters, which is the maximum we're allowed to grow at any one site, that oyster might translate into about between $20,000 and $30,000. For 100,000 comparably sized triploid virginica, you might get $10,000 or $15,000 out of it. So you can see that it holds a lot of potential for the industry.
May I ask a question?
Absolutely. Mr. Fox.
Mr. Erskine, how would you compare the growth rate over a one-year period of the virginica, triploid virginica versus the triploid Ariakensis, and how would you compare the shucking out rate of the two, and how would you compare the survival rate of the two over a comparable period of time?
There's been a lot of information collected about it, and you know, we do know, like Mr. Carr said, that there may be issues that we need to work with as far as a half-shell oyster for Ariakensis. The shell is very thin. That lends itself to why it's filtering all year round and growing at such a rapid rate. But for a shucking oyster, it's probably, in terms of what the industry would say, it probably produces 11 to 13 pints per bushel whereas a native triploid oyster may produce between 8 and 9 pints per bushel. It's significantly higher. In terms of growth, we find that at triploid area cancers across all sites, high salinity and low salinity and moderate salinity, that it gets to market size within about 9 months. A triploid virginica probably gets to market size within 12 to 18 months, and depending on the salinity. In terms of survival, with these projects, we found anywhere from upwards of, outside of an environmental event, we found upwards of 95% to 100% survival. Virginica is probably more down towards 50 to 75% survival.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else in support of the project? Yes, sir. Good afternoon, sir.
Ken Smith, Virginia Watermen's Association. I'm in favor of anything that helps clean the bay and filter the bay. Miss Porter was talking about how it was 1.3 million oysters to go overboard, and the reason that they were in support of that is because they've got a demand for that 1.3 oysters. The question I've got on this, is that demand for this non-native oyster alone, is that what they're selling, or do they've just got a demand for another 1.3 million oysters that go into a can that implies that it's a Chesapeake Bay oyster? I mean, is it being sold as a non-native oyster, or is it being sold as a Chesapeake Bay oyster? And the reason I ask that is that if it's being sold as a Chesapeake Bay oyster, and we've got a quality oyster here right now, then we might be supplying an inferior oyster, getting the name of a Chesapeake Bay oyster, and the price of our oyster will go down. As oystermen, we can go out there and start to catch them, and they've been in the two places, and our price could be dropped because they say, well, you've got the two mixed together.
Well, as I remember the code, I'm trying to find it in here, even if, and I'll ask AJ if they're selling it, but just to jump ahead, if you take an oyster from somewhere else, put it over in Virginia waters for at least 6 months,
it drinks Virginia water.
You can call it a Virginia oyster.
Yeah.
You can sell it as a Virginia oyster, as I recall. Is that correct by there? One hour? AJ, but what's the answer to the question on the area, Kansas?
We actually label all of the gallons that we pack these oysters in as new species triploid area, Kansas.
Thank you.
Good enough. Yes, sir. Anyone else? Anyone here in opposition to the project? If I could speak. Okay. The code is specific. What I will do is, Jack, you want to wrap it up? Did you have any I will continue to take comments, and the code is specific as to the time frame of my decision. I will notify through the appropriate channels the Seafood Council at the expiration of the public comment period and before the expiration of the deadline. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, would you like
comment? Absolutely.
From the Assistant Commissioner?
Absolutely.
Well, I think we've had very little opposition. I think we've heard an analysis of the risk. As Dr. Mann says, the risks are there, but they are tiny. I think we've also heard from Mr. Erskine that the area of Kansas grows faster, shucks out a larger volume, and has less mortality. Therefore, it would appear to be economically viable for an industry that needs some economic help. I think we've also addressed the issue of whether we need this test to provide additional information, and certainly Secretary Bryant's letter indicates that he feels at least that we do need this test to provide additional information. Based on these and a number of other factors as have been stated, I would recommend perhaps a motion of endorsement to support your decision-making process of this board, if that's appropriate.
You're more than welcome to make that motion if you'd like.
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
second by Mr. Robbins. Further discussion on the motion. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to add a little bit, indeed, I think the council is moving forward or proposing to move forward with a very responsible project that includes very strict biosecurity protocols. And I think this would continue to lay the groundwork for the future of the aquaculture industry. It's clear that that is the way the future, as Dr. Mann pointed out. And I think this will continue to lay that important groundwork. And we certainly will, I think, increase our understanding of the shelf life of the product and other important attributes of the product. But I think it's important that we not interrupt this development phase that we're in right now. I think the industry is moving in this direction. There's clearly important work being done, and I think it ought to continue. And I don't think it would in any way jeopardize the EIS process. If anything, it should contribute further to our understanding of the species. So I would support the motion.
Thank you. Mr. Tanker?
I support the motion as well. The only thing I might mention, with all due respect to the Seafood Council and their great work that they've done, is I would ask them not to turn their backs on this native oyster. Over on the shore, we've seen great success with this Triploid virginicus, and I don't perhaps haven't seen the same thing on the western shore, but people have been aghast at the size of oysters that have been produced on the eastern shore that are native virginicus. And I had some last night myself. It's staggering, the size and quality. So thank you for your work.
Yeah. Mr. Schick?
I respect the comments that have come from some of the federal agencies, and I understand where they're coming from. The viability of the area Kansas oyster in the marketplace is not necessarily their primary concern, but it is one of ours, along with the environmental impact study and other things that come along with it. We have to put it all together in the same basket, and we don't have the luxury of saying it doesn't matter how many zeros are in front of a number, you know, it's a risk and we don't want to do it. We don't have that luxury. The United States has an issue to deal with as a whole. This area regionally has an issue. We need to have a market, and we need to get back on top of the oyster market worldwide. And a joint effort of getting both of these oysters to viability is important in doing that. Aquaculture is the future, and Area Kansas is a major part of that. And we need to continue the business side of this. So after the EIS is completed, and hopefully will lend its support to the aquaculture aspect of this, we can continue and get back into business of being a world leader in oyster production.
Thank you, Mr. Schick. Further comment? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Note that the chair abstained on that vote, please. Mr. Holland?
Everybody's leaving me, so y'all are in my hands here. We'll go to item six, George DeMarco.
Mr. DeMarco, this is consideration of whether his existing clam aquaculture operations qualify under Regulation 4 VAC 20-335 pertaining to on-bottom aquaculture activities. He's also seeking after-the-fact authorization to retain a 6-inch raw water intake extending approximately 375 feet channelward of mean high water, as well as authorization to deploy on a seasonal basis approximately 1,300 linear feet of stake net for predator exclusion purposes around the perimeter of a 200,000 square foot clam aquaculture grow-out area adjacent to a